Radio Prague News.
The Czech Muslim community has distanced itself from the violent protests around the world against the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. The Central Infection Commission is to meet on Tuesday in response to the growing number of cases of bird flu in Europe. And Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has discussed mutual trade, cultural exchange and the Czech experience of EU membership with his Tunisian counterpart. The Czech Muslim community has distanced itself from the violent protests taking place around the world against the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad in Western newspapers. The protests were among the topics discussed on Monday by Interior Minister František Bublan and representatives of Muslim organizations in the Czech Republic. The Czech Muslim community amounts to a few thousand, several hundred of those being Czech converts. The Agriculture Minister Jan Mládek has called the Central Infection Commission to meet on Tuesday in response to the growing number of cases of bird flu in Europe. The body should discuss possible measures of prevention of an outbreak of the infection. The deadly H5N1 bird flu virus has recently been detected in birds in Italy, Greece, Slovenia and Bulgaria. The Czech Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, who is visiting North Africa, has met his Tunisian counterpart Mohamed Ghannouchi to discuss mutual trade, cultural exchange and the Czech experience of EU membership. Prime Minister Paroubek told reporters that areas potentially interesting for Czech companies are mainly the Tunisian infrastructure, the pharmaceutical industry and tourism. On Tuesday, Prime Minister Paroubek is scheduled to meet Moroccan officials. Firefighters evacuated a primary school in East Bohemia on Monday morning after its roof had shifted under a weight of snow. The layer of snow was up to 2 meters thick in places. Also on Monday morning, firefighters in North Moravia evacuated part of a warehouse after its roof buckled under a weight of snow. No one was hurt in either case. In the course of this winter, a number of roofs have collapsed in the Czech Republic because of continuous heavy snowfall and insufficient maintenance. As he marks 100 days in office, Health Minister David Rath has told reporters he believes the time has been well spent. Among his achievements, Mr. Rath listed the fact that the debt of the General Health Insurance Company has been reduced, the flow of money in the health insurance system has improved and standards for the assessment of quality of healthcare have been introduced. On the other hand, Mr. Rath has been repeatedly criticized by a number of professional associations over his policies. And finally, a glance at the weather. The weather should be partly cloudy to overcast in the next couple of days, with a chance of sleet or rain. Daytime temperatures are expected to range from +1 to +6 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Jan Wellinger. Coming up, the president clashes with the prime minister over a proposed bill on same-sex partnerships. We look at a new exhibition on Czech caricature and find out how Czechs have fared so far at the 20th Winter Olympics in Turin. Those stories and more ahead. After 7 years of intensive lobbying, it seemed that Czech gays and lesbians would finally get their wish, a law enabling them to enter into a form of marriage, give them inheritance rights and the right to be briefed about their partner's state of health. Here's gay rights advocate Teresa Kogičková.
These people are not ill, they are not sinners, they are just citizens like any others, so they have their rights to be treated in the same way the others are.
However, the bill, which has been approved by both houses of parliament now, seems to have hit the rocks after President Václav Klaus slammed it last week. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek came out strongly in its defense, and he and the president are now embroiled in a heated and highly publicized debate over the rights and freedom of minorities. And Daniela Lazarova has been following the story, and she's here in the studio. Daniela, we've been hearing very strong words from both the prime minister and the president. What's happening?
Well, as you said, Jan, the president has so far refused to sign the bill on the grounds that it allegedly undermines traditional values and the institution of marriage as such. He went so far as to call it a tragic mistake which would give homosexuals unjustified privileges. This elicited an angry response from the Prime Minister, who did a great deal to ensure support for the bill in the lower house, and he promptly wrote a letter to the president urging him to change his mind. Now, we don't know how that request was worded, but we do know that it contained a reference to the rights and freedom of minorities, and that it evoked a very, very angry response from the president's spokesman.
The Prime Minister doesn't have a mandate to lecture the President and the citizens of this country about the meaning of freedom. The Prime Minister is using the bill for his own election campaign, and the President categorically refuses to be drawn into it.
So very strong words indeed there from the President's spokesman. And what is going to happen now?
Well, the president is currently at the Olympic Games in Turin, but he has said that he will make up his mind by Thursday whether he's going to just refuse to sign the bill or whether he'll go as far as to veto it. If he refused to sign, then the bill would automatically become law in due time. But if he vetoed it, which would be the logical thing to expect, I think, given the strength of his arguments against it, then its advocates in Parliament would need a majority of 101 votes to override it. And it is not clear whether they would have enough votes to do that, given the fact that this bill has divided politicians across the political spectrum and that the coalition as a whole does not support it. It was only approved by 86 votes in the lower house last December, which of course is a sobering thought for the homosexual community.
Mm-hmm. And if it should come to a new vote, what role will the fact that this year is an election year have in that vote?
That's very hard to say. On the one hand, MPs might be more open to the argument that 62% of Czechs have indicated that they have nothing at all against gay marriages. On the other hand, the sentiments of the general public are fairly lukewarm on this issue, and MPs realise that either way, their vote on this would not seriously harm their image. So if it becomes an election issue, it is not likely to be one of the big issues on the Czech political scene.
OK, thanks, Daniela Lazarová. And as you said, we'll know later this week how that is going to turn out. With caricatures at the center of attention and debate these days, the opening of a new exhibition in Prague's Stone Bell House has turned out to be most timely. Inspired by the popularity of a show last year devoted to Adolf Hofmeister's long career, the City Gallery of Prague and the National Gallery have designed an exhibition featuring Czech caricature art from 1900 to 1950. Linda Maštalíš has the details.
The past has its mosaics, its frescoes, its panel paintings. Today and tomorrow has the poster, the postcard, the caricature, and the cartoon. When Karel Taige, the leader of the famous Czech group of artists, Devět Cíl, wrote these words in 1922, he could have hardly imagined how relevant they would be in 2006, given the recent international controversies over cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Radio Prague spoke to Ondřej Chrobák, one of the exhibit's curators, about whether there is a common theme in Czech caricature during the first half of the 20th century.
Caricature itself returns to certain themes. It has its favorite moments and many clichés that reappear. But these 50 years represent such a varied and dramatic time, politically and artistically, that it's impossible to speak about only one style or a running theme. But, for example, Karel Kramář, who was Czechoslovakia's first prime minister after 1918, was featured in caricatures from the time he first entered politics in the late 1880s until his death in 1937. Without exception, all caricature artists tried to portray Kramář at least once.
One of the larger components of the exhibit is a section entitled Laughter in the First Republic. The works of influential artists like Antonín Pelc, František Bidlo, and Zdeněk Kratochvíl illustrate the rivalry between contemporary political parties. Other popular themes include censorship, political surveillance, bureaucracy, and religion. Ondřej Chrobák explains why religion and the church were popular subjects for caricature artists.
Pro vlastně levicové autory, kteří vlastně
For authors like František Kupka, who sympathized with the radical left from the beginning of the 20th century, the role of the church as an institution was the primary target, rather than religion itself. One of the most frequent themes involved depictions of the church using religion as a means to control people. The church was seen as the main opponent of the left and the communists, so this was an important trend, but religion itself wasn't attacked directly. Usually it was the church that was accused of influencing the masses, of manipulating people using religion.
Interestingly, of the over 280 images on display, the vast majority are by left-wing artists whose work has survived in excellent condition because it was favored by the communist regime. Also interesting are the fates of many of the artists. Tomáš Winter, another curator, describes the influence of Czech caricature artists in English-speaking countries.
Asi nejvýznamnější přehlídka, co byla v první polovině 20. století, byla přehlídka Antonína Pelce a...
The most important exhibit that took place in the first half of the 20th century was one featuring Antonín Pelc and Adolf Hofmeister at the Museum of Modern Art in New York in 1943. Otherwise, the Prague-born Walter Trier, who left in 1909 to study in Munich, was in London after 1936, and his caricatures ran in local London magazines. His work caught the attention of American producer Walt Disney, but Trier eventually refused Disney's offer of employment. Another example is Zdeněk Kolařík, who drew for the Army newspaper in Great Britain. But from an artistic point of view, his caricatures are not of the same quality as Hofmeister's, Pelc's, and even Trier's work.
The exhibition is on at the House of the Stone Bell until May the 7th.
You're tuned to Radio Prague, where it's now time for the latest sports news with Ian Willoughby.
Thanks, Jan. Well, no prizes for guessing the focus of today's sports news. Of course, it's the Winter Olympics in Turin, where on Sunday, cross-country skier Kateřina Neumannová took the Czech Republic's first medal, silver in the 15-kilometer pursuit. Neumannová, who already had 3 Olympic medals to her name, was agonizingly close to her first-ever gold, but she was overtaken on the final stretch by Kristina Šmigun of Estonia. The Czech, who has 2 more events in Turin, had this to say after Sunday's race.
It's a silver medal from the Olympics, so it's the perfect start. It means I can be more relaxed going into my next events. I've achieved something. We have a medal. But of course, gold is gold and I was very close, but Šmigun was better.
Kateřina Neumannová. Another Czech in action at the weekend was speed skater Martina Sablíková. In her first Olympics event, Sablíková, still just 18, finished a respectable 7th in the ladies' 3,000 metres. She said the ice in Turin was a little slow for her liking, but she won't be going home dissatisfied.
The way I look at it, the last time I skated here, I made a time of 4 minutes 11 seconds, and this time it was 4:08, so that's an improvement. I was hoping to finish in the top 8, so I'm really happy with 7th place.
One Czech competitor who won't have been happy to finish down the rankings is Nikola Sudová, who came 6th in the ladies' moguls. Questions have been asked about the low number of points she received for one jump they call the D-spin X, and Sudová's coach went so far as to describe the work of the moguls' judges as a poor advertisement for the discipline. Her younger sister, Šárka Sudová, finished 26th. Ski jumper Jakub Janda, meanwhile, went into the Turin Games carrying the hopes of the Czech nation, after a season in which he won several World Cup events and shared first place in the Four Hills tournament. So it was an absolutely huge disappointment on Sunday when Janda, the favourite, finished a very poor 13th in the individual normal hill event. The Czech said the conditions in Turin were perfect and the fault was all his. Another Czech who may have been expected to do better was cross-country skier Lukáš Bauer. The 28-year-old set the pace in the men's 30-kilometre pursuit for much of the race, before fading and eventually coming in 10th. Bauer later criticised what he called the laziness of the other competitors, who bided their time and preserved their energy on a difficult wet course. And before I go, just one more story from the world of Czech sport. The great Jan Železný has just announced that the forthcoming athletic season will be his last. Železný, who turns 40 in June, has 3 Olympic titles to his name and is widely considered the greatest athlete in the history of the javelin. That's all the sport for today.
And Ian Willoughby is sticking around now for One-on-One. His guest is architect Jan Kaplický.
Today we meet Jan Kaplický, who's regarded by many as the greatest Czech architect of his generation. Listeners in the UK will surely know his amazing Selfridges building in Birmingham. But although Jan Kaplický has won world renown for the work of his London-based company Future Systems, he's found himself somewhat at odds with the establishment here in the Czech Republic. Mr. Kaplický was born in Prague in 1937, and when we met recently, he first told me something about his family background.
My father was a sculptor and painter, and he did some few small pieces of architecture like the garden and some other things. And my mother illustrated books on plants to the last day of her life. Many were published in different sort of languages, in English and of course distributed around the world. So there was a lot of that. She'd done some pieces of fashion in when she was very young and things like that. So there was always this. My father used to write articles, and so it was all around. Then, of course, the catastrophe of the war came, and after break of about 2 years, the 40 years of the communism started, and or I should say Stalinism, and you couldn't do anything. I mean, it was literally impossible to exhibit, to design or whatever. Everything was strictly controlled, and you were basically living for in a small environment of your home, if you were lucky. If you were not like many of my friends, their families were expelled from Prague and things like that. You were very lucky that you could stay even in your own house.
If we can now go forward in time to 1968, you decided to leave, I understand, immediately, as soon as the Russian tanks rolled in.
I realized that time has come, you can't stay here because there's absolutely no hope in your life. Maybe later, luckily we are sitting here and Czech Republic is part of NATO and Europe and all this and that, which is incredible. But that time I thought I can't waste more of time sort of sitting and waiting if some Politburo will make a decision or not. That is not how you can live your life. That is impossibility.
You went to London. Why London? Was it your first choice?
In a way, yes, because I could speak something, and I didn't want to stay in German world of Austria or Germany. Also sort of smell maybe something will happen architecturally there, which wasn't yet, but it was beginning to simmer somewhere in a corner, and I was right. Then Britain started to be architectural superpower, which certainly it wasn't in 1968.
You yourself were, I believe, 31 when you left here.
Yes.
How long did it take you to get established in the UK?
Many years. I would say 10 years, maybe more. Particularly if you're doing things which are not automatically accepted or whatever, or you don't want to go 100% commercial line, which maybe would be easier. You must realize you don't have any capital whatsoever. I had $100 from borrowed from my client, and you can't write a letter to your mother and say, please send me another 100.
In 1979, you set up Future Systems. That's an extremely ambitious name, it seems to me. What was the thinking behind Future Systems?
The one idea, which sounds now more normal, was to have a name which doesn't represent name of the people. And luckily we did it because the people change. And I think the architecture is not activity by one man or woman. It is activity of many.
In recent years, you've had a few acclaimed buildings realized in Britain, the Lords Cricket Ground Media Centre, and of course in Birmingham, the futuristic and remarkable Selfridges building.
It's not futuristic because it's here. Now it's on the posters around Birmingham, it's on the bankers' cards, and it's I'm sure postcards are coming very soon, and maybe even postage stamps. If it is symbol of town, Sydney Opera is a symbol of Sydney. That's fine. They are very grateful. The city fathers or planners were very impressed. They love it, because it brings some attention to Birmingham. And some people like it. Well, maybe somebody on the corner doesn't like it. That's fine. That's a democratic state. And I'm sure the Parthenon was hated by a few characters, and so was the cathedral in Canterbury. And Empire State Building wasn't loved, and now it's popular culture.
If I can come back to this country, how do you feel that the authorities in Prague especially have treated architecture and modern architecture?
Well, authorities sometimes, I think, don't treat anything after 1900 in great respect. They are worried about some little cornice on very average apartment building, which are millions of them here in Vienna and Budapest and God knows where else. That's not, if one of them goes, I mean, the world goes around very happily, but some unique buildings from 30s or even late 20s were destroyed. They let them be destroyed commercially and otherwise. I would cry sometimes what's happening, how it is possible legally. I don't know.
Do you think that the decades of communism perhaps distorted or destroyed people's aesthetic sense in this country?
They certainly did. You must also add 6 years of fascism. I think people who were maximum teenagers, 89, maximum, they didn't even start architecture school, they probably have a chances, and they will develop, and I'm sure very successful people, not just commercially but mentally.
How has Czech design caught up with the West, so to speak, in the last 15 years?
That's the most difficult question of all the questions. Well, I still feel they somehow are a little bit isolated, or they were. Some people build their reputation on isolation. That happened after 89 as well. Some people base their careers on being famous under total isolation. Now, it is Europe. I can't believe that some of the very high officials, we shouldn't mention the highest one, can be anti-European. It's almost criminal to think like that. They are a little bit scared of producing something unusual, and they are obsessed about some being Czech or something. Well, that doesn't exist. I mean, have you heard of Lithuanian architecture? It doesn't exist. It's new European architecture.
Do you get young Czech architects applying for internships or jobs at Future Systems?
No. And don't ask me why. I don't know. I simply don't know. Maybe they are not. They tell them not to, but I don't know. I don't know.
The most controversial building here in recent years, I suppose, was the dancing building by the Vltava, by Vlado Milunic and Frank Gehry. What's your opinion on that building? I know people are divided over it.
Well, they are, and the building which makes so much fuss here, quite rightly, is actually designed by somebody from outside. So is the Jean Nouvel Center in Smíchov. That's not without interest. And the client in both cases are the foreign firms. Why Czech company is not inviting, and there are sort of landmark buildings, particularly with the Geary building. More of that, more of that. Why this worry about being unusual? It will come here, and I'm sure somebody will build something extraordinary on Wenceslas Square or wherever.
Jan Kaplitsky, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Czech architect Jan Kaplitsky speaking there to Ian Willoughby in this week's edition of One on One. And you may want to check out photographs of Mr. Kaplitsky's work, which you can see at our website. Our address is www.radio.cz/en. We hope you enjoy listening to the program. For all of us here at Radio Prague, thanks for listening, and do tune in again soon.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Sept heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 8h30, 8h57. Europe, 9860, 11600. 17h30, 17h57. Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 15710. 19h30, 19h57. Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 9430, 23h, 23h27. Amérique du Nord, 5930, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.